You know, I've often heard people say you can't preach the gospel freely in Israel. Well, my guest, native-born Israeli, wonderfully saved by Jesus Yeshua, has been doing it on the front lines for years.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Why me? Why me? That's the question on the front cover of this book by Yaakov, or Jacob in English, Domkani, with some amazing pictures right on the front cover as he's on the street preaching the gospel, and some religious Jews are not particularly happy with him doing it. Welcome, friends, to the broadcast, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I've got a thoroughly Jewish guest with me. If you've got questions or comments, the number to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And to answer the why me question and to tell us about reaching Jewish people with the gospel on the front lines of Israel, without further ado, my guest, Yaakov Domkani. Yaakov, thanks so much for being on the broadcast with us today.
Good morning, Michael. So good to hear you. Good morning, America. What a privilege, how a blessing just to be here online with you and hopefully just bringing forth truth.
Yes, I'm sure we will. Now, Yaakov, it's obvious that you were not born in the United States. Where were you born and into what kind of family?
Well, I was actually made in Iran and delivered by the Sea of Galilee. My mother, bless her heart, was 5 months pregnant with me in her womb when Israel became a nation and the family moved to Israel. My father, Moses, Moshe, my mother, Galina, with 5 children who were born in Iran. When they heard that Israel became a nation, Michael, can a nation be born in one day? So God promised. God knows how to bring all his promises alive. And when that day have come precisely on his timetable, my family came to Israel, and there I was born. 2 more children. We grew up 8 children in 1.5 rooms in a small little village called Kiryat Shmona, right beneath the Golan Heights and next to the border of Lebanon. And that's where I was born.
And was it a religious home that you were born in?
Yeah, religious home, not Orthodox, but the knitted yarmulke, not the black dress Jews, the knitted yarmulke, that's where I grew up. My life was very much involved in the synagogue and religious activities and tradition, and you know, the Jewish, we know how to make tradition out of everything, and we have accumulated
beautiful traditions,
lots of beautiful traditions.
Yeah.
Beautiful ones, yes.
And lots of them. But you you didn't find God in your own life in the midst of those traditions, though, did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't. That's why I stopped when I was 16 years of age. I just felt like I'm a man enough to tell my father I'm not going to the synagogue anymore. And those rituals have not really took a hold of my heart, and I'm the kind of a man that whatever I do with all my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And when my heart was not there, I just decided that's not the real thing, and I left, and that was it. 16 years of age, went a little bit into the hippie movement, you know, those years.
Yeah, and, I was there.
Yeah, you were there, but you were in America, right?
In America, exactly.
Yeah, I left. Well, we moved in my bar mitzvah. We moved from Kiryat Shmona to Holon, which is right south of Tel Aviv. But 16 years of age, this whole life was for me primarily by the Red Sea and Eilat, where it was really happening, right there on the beach with the sunshine, with all the hippies and the beatniks who came from all over the world.
All right, so there was a happening taking place. Obviously, you're not going to find God in the midst of a hippie happening, or the real God. We'll find out what happened to my guest, Yaakov Dankani. His website, trumpetofsalvation.org. That's trumpetofsalvation.org.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, Thoroughly Jewish Israeli Evangelist Yaakov Dankani, his website, Trumpet of Salvation, all one word, trumpetofsalvation.org, his book with his testimony, Why Me? You can find out more at the website, trumpetofsalvation.org. So, Yaakov, right before the break, we left you by the Red Sea in the midst of the hippie movement. You did not find God yourself in the midst of the synagogue and tradition you had been raised in the 50s in Israel, in the infancy of the state of Israel, now into the 60s, the hippie movement. So what happens? How do you get from there to find Jesus, Yeshua, as so many of us did? So many of us Jewish hippies were brought by the Lord to meet him. What happened in your life?
I left. Israel became small on me. I mean, I was just like an adventurous young man. And I left Israel, started my traveling in Europe. From Europe, I went to the Bahamas. From the Bahamas, I landed in Miami Beach. From Miami Beach, I hitchhiked to Brooklyn, New York. I spent my first year in Borough Park. You familiar with that neighborhood?
Of course.
And and from Borough Park, the Lord, I didn't know him by then, took me to New Jersey. And so there I was in Asbury Park, and my whole life was... what can I say? Like most young people. And I was hanging out in the Stone Pony with Bruce Springsteen before he became who he was, just when he was playing in the Stone Pony there in Asbury Park. And there I had my shop in Long Branch, New Jersey, in Deal. Actually, my shop was in Deal, right in this Syrian, Jewish, great neighborhood, little town, actually. And I had a shop. I import from Israel. I import from Mexico. And on my desk, I had my Bible. And, of course, when I refer to my Bible, I'm just speaking about the Old Covenant. I, although gave up on religion, I deep inside, I knew there is a God. I just looked at the history of my people, and I knew there must be a God. I want nothing to do with religion, but the Bible I loved. And so there I was reading my Bible. I love to read Psalms, Proverbs. And one day, this man named Jeff walks into my shop. He sees my Bible in Hebrew. He lights up. He gets excited. He realizes now in front of him is a Jew from Israel. And he begins to just speak to me about Yeshua. And Michael, you know, our first reaction, there is so much sand, so much gravel, so much salt that has been poured into our heart, into our eyes, be it by the so-called church, be it by rabbinical Judaism, that the minute the issue of Yeshua rises up, the only thing we know how to speak about is the Inquisition, the Crusaders, the pogroms, the killing of the Jews, and my reaction was pretty harsh to Jeff. I want nothing to do with this. But this Jeff was so full of love and kindness and patience and humility of heart, and he understood where I'm coming from. And he took the time, and I tell you, in a matter of 6 months, he started coming and visiting me once a week, twice a week in the shop. Right before I close the shop, he appears on his motorcycle, and then he comes in and he begins to unfold scriptures. And he goes from one prophecy to the next prophecy. He starts with Isaiah 53, which I could not ignore, and won't take time to talk about this prophecy, but I invite all our hearers to just take time and read that glorious prophecy. Isaiah 53, great chapter, word by word, verse by verse, described Yeshua precisely how he is to come as a lamb to the slaughter and cleanse us from all iniquity. He takes me from there to Daniel chapter 9, and I cannot really argue with mathematics because he now spells out for me that when Messiah comes, he is to be cut off, and there the dates are stated that precisely at this day, Daniel, who lived 500 years before Messiah, tells us when he is to come and when he is to be cut off. Now, I grew up to think that when Messiah comes, it will bring peace and will be peace upon the face of the earth. All of a sudden, I realize that he first have to guzzle them to the slaughter. He first have to come and be cut off. He's to be despised. And so he begins to really make me think. And from there, he takes me to Jeremiah 31, this great promise of a new covenant that the church, you know, just tells us that it's their new covenant. However, it's there established with the household of Israel, with the house of Judah. I was shocked to see these great promises. From there, he takes me to the fact that Messiah had to be born in Bethlehem, Micah chapter 5. And one of the things that really got a hold of me, Michael, is this great promise that God gives, a very clear promise that there will come a day in the history of Israel, he himself will come and cleanse us and purify us. He himself will come and take our heart of stone, give us a new heart, and put his spirit within us. And when you understand the counsel of God, it's when that takes place that God is going to bring an end to a temple made out of stone, silver, and gold, and make men the living temple, the living stone. Well, to make a long story short, Jeff really got my attention, provoked me to jealousy. I mean, he did provoke me to jealousy. Here is this Gentile man. At first, I thought he's just a lunatic. Who are you that God will speak to you?
Right.
If God wouldn't speak to anyone, he'll speak to the Jews. All throughout the Old Covenant, all throughout the New Covenant, now that we know, everything, he's speaking to the Jewish people, and you telling me God speaks to you, and you speak to him, and you have this great relationship. And at first, I really thought this man is a lunatic, but over time, I realized, wow, this is a real thing here. Looking into his eyes, looking at the countenance of his face, looking at the assurance and the confidence that this man have with God, my God, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who promised forgiveness and salvation and redemption, and he has taken my inheritance. And I thought to myself, wow, I really have to read this new covenant.
And so he was really, in the language of Romans 11, provoking you to jealousy. That's what was actually happening.
That's absolutely what he really did, but he did it so beautifully because he was well acquainted with the Old Covenant, well acquainted with history, and what he really helped me in a matter of, it took him some time though, because, you know, I was as stubborn as I was. I think it was about 6 months before I began to really start taking upon myself to read the New Covenant. But what he really did, he helped me to realize the difference between Yeshua the Jew and the Inquisition and the Crusaders. He helped me to he put some order in my mind, and he brought me to a place of being able to distinguish between Jesus the Jew and what the church have made out of him and what the rabbis have made out of him. And when I understood all of that, I thought to myself, now I must read the New Covenant. And he brought it to me in Hebrew. And first time in life, I'm 25 years of age in New Jersey, I'm beginning to read the New Covenant, and I tell you, everything I read takes me back to Galilee, where I grew up, to the synagogue, to the temple in Jerusalem. Everything I read is about...
So this was not some foreign religion about a foreign religious leader. This was homegrown Jewish leader, and it's playing out right in the land where you grew up. So was that a shock to you when you read that?
Yeah. I mean, it really was shocked to me because what do I read? I read all about love and compassion and forgive one another and serve each other and think others more important than yourself and love your enemy and pray for your enemy and give your other cheek. I mean, I'm hawk the holy walk. Whatsoever you do, do to the glory of God. Either you drink or you eat, you live or you die. Whatever you do to God, and it's all about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And now I'm coming in touch with reality that it's all about the feast I grew up with. It's all about Shabbat and Pesach, Passover, and Shavuot, Pentecost, and Sukkot, Tabernacle. And I read nothing about the trees of Christmas, and I read nothing about the eggs of Easter, and I don't hear the sound of the bells in the church, but I hear the sound of the shofar, the trumpet, and I just woke up to the reality, how did the Gentile world has taken such a Jewish document, which is all about my God, my people, in my land, all about love and holy narrow walk, and they made out of it a sword to really kill us throughout history and the distinction begin to really fall deep into my heart. Wow, indeed, Yeshua, I have nothing to do with that. And when I realized that my identity as a Jew is not being jeopardized, and when I really saw Yeshua really standing up against the hypocrisy and the corruption in the religious system, and how he really attacked this whole hypocrisy, and you know very well that religion is number one enemy to the truth of God.
And yeah, so and on all sides. In fact, let me just jump in for one second. Obviously, we have the weakness of man-made religion in every different setting and in every different circle, be it Jewish, be it Christian, be it you name it. But here, Yaakov Dunkani encounters the real Yeshua. If you're listening, you're a Jewish person listening, oh, you need to keep listening. Go to the website, trumpetofsalvation.org, trumpetofsalvation.org. Get the book, Why Me? By Yaakov Jacob Dunkani.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I am thoroughly enjoying the testimony of Yaakov Dunkani. I've known Yaakov over the years. We've met in Israel several times, but he has always been known for many, many years as a fearless street preacher, sharing the gospel, never backing down, never being ashamed of Yeshua. His website, trumpetofsalvation.org. His book, Why Me? It's just the cover alone will pull you in. Yaakov, before we get back to your story, I've got a tour to Israel, our first ever tour that I'll be leading in May of next year. Why do you think it's important for believers to actually go and experience Israel for themselves?
Well, I think they should come, and if it's their first time coming, visit those sites that are really essential for us to really see. But if they really are coming on the second arrival, second time, many of them coming time and time and again, I think they need to really learn how to relate the gospel to the Jewish people in a Jewish context and make out of their tour not just jumping from one holy site to the next holy site, but engaging with Israel and opening their eyes to recognize Yeshua, relating the gospel to them. We spoke before about religion, and what really breaks my heart, and it's really anguish of heart for me, is that so many people in Israel and across the globe giving up on God because of religion. And that is heartbreaking, because life with God is so much more colorful, so much more adventurous, so much more powerful, and no one will reach its potential, and no one will really climb the mountaintops, and no one will receive truly the wings of eagle unless they come to God, who knows the best for each and every one of us and knows how to open door and lead people. And that's the beautiful thing about the difference between religion and God. Religion really want to push us into the box, and you do that, don't do that, don't do that, do that. And when you get to know God in the Spirit, which He promised He will give us the Spirit, it's another life altogether. And so I know we just finished speaking before about that, this whole religion issue, and I had to really close that circle. But coming to Israel,
of course.
But coming to Israel, I think it's very important to just visit all those sites, Jerusalem, Mount of Olives, the temple site. And you know what? We need to begin to really have a movement of breaking through the Mount Temple. I mean, this is Israel government need to really wake up to the reality that we are a sovereign nation and that we have the authority over the temple. And you need to realize that they don't let us get into the temple with the Bible, these Muslims people who really are on the Mount Temple. And we need to make a lobby. We need to really shake the government of Israel to really come to a point of taking the Mount Temple really under Israel's sovereignty. That really breaks my heart, that I cannot go to the Mount Temple where my temple was by Solomon. I cannot go there with a Bible. They check you out as you enter the Mount Temple. If you have a Bible, you're out.
Yeah, I mean, there is everyone that goes to Israel, that's one of the amazing things. When you go to the Old City, when you go to Jerusalem, when you see the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock, and you realize the presence of Islam, and obviously God's heart to save the Muslims as well. And of course, on the trip, Amen. We're going to be doing teaching and informing people of so many of these things, connecting with Jewish believers in the land. But Yaakov, we've got a whole lot more to talk about. Let's just take a couple minutes now.
One more thing about traveling to Israel. You know, every time I meet the saints that are really so much love with their love and heart for Israel, my cry for them, my prayer for them, that when they visit Israel, they'll come in touch with the reality of the faithfulness of God, the might and the power of God, God who is able to perform every word he says. He promised to bring us back, he brings us back. He promised that the Jewish will really come to him in Yeshua Mashiach. There is a still small voice beginning to rise in Israel. Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, referring to Yeshua. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. I mean, to really see at this day and age those prophecies being unfolded before our very eyes, it is an amazing thing. So my prayer is that when you bring a group or any group that comes to Israel, anyone individually visit Israel, that everyone should really wake up to the reality that there is a God that we can trust our life into his hand and follow him and truly take his instructions seriously and principles of the kingdom he's given us and the life he's really calling us to live by, that we should take it seriously, because there in Israel, you come to the real reality. Wow. What he says, he knows how to bring to pass.
So 80%
of his promises has been fulfilled in Israel and in Yeshua HaMashiach. We can rest assured that the remaining 20% will be fulfilled. Therefore, wow, it's a great thing to trust life into the hands of God.
It is the truth. When you're there and you realize this has happened because of the will of God, and like you say, 80% of the prophecies, whatever the exact count, fulfilled in Israel, fulfilled through Yeshua, where is it going to unfold? Where is it going to come to pass at the end of the age? And it's so important when we do this tour in May, Yaakov, that we'll spend time connecting Christians with Jewish believers in the land, because a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of Christian love for Israel, and sometimes it's superficial, and sometimes it fails to connect with the Israel within Israel, the remnant. And you've been on the front lines as an evangelist in that remnant for years. Listen, we've got a lot more to talk about, Yaakov, but when we come back, I want to find out the transformation that took place in your life when you embrace the fact that this Jesus Yeshua was the Messiah, not the God of a foreign church or a foreign religion. What happened in your life? And then let's talk some of the experiences. What's happened to you preaching the gospel in the land? What's happened to you sharing the good news of Yeshua on the front lines with Orthodox Jews? Find out what happened and what's going on within the land today. The website, trumpetofsalvation.org. It's one word, trumpetofsalvation.org. And the book, which I'm sure you're going to want to read, Why Me? My guest, Jacob Yaakov Damkani. So get hold of this book, visit the website, and see what you can do to be a blessing to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then join me. Some of you have been thinking about it. Time to take the plunge. Hey, the clock is ticking. We're mid-November already. Before you know it, we'll be in 2014. Before you know it, we'll be boarding the planes for Israel. We want you to be with us on the tour. The first one I've ever led. I'll be joined by Dr. Michael Redelnik, Professor of Jewish Studies at Moody Bible Institute. We'll be doing special teaching. I'll be doing live broadcasting from Israel that you'll be part of. So it's going to be the tour of a lifetime. Right now is the time to sign up, get your deposit in. Go to askdrbrown.org and click on the Israel Tour banner. Join us today. Tell your friends. Get a whole group to go. askdrbrown.org. Click on the Tour to Israel banner.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. I am thoroughly enjoying speaking with my guest, Yaakov Damkani. When people would tell me for years, well, you know, you can't preach the gospel in Israel, I'd say, oh, well, folks are doing it. And I'd always think of Yaakov because he's been a fearless preacher of the good news of Yeshua on the streets of Israel and in many other settings for many years now. We're in the midst of hearing his testimony from his book, Why Me? And here he is. He's been in the hippie movement, raised in a religious home in Israel, not ultra-Orthodox, but raised in a traditional home in Israel, doesn't find God in the synagogue in his own life, moves to the States eventually. He's in the hippie movement. A Christian man shares the gospel with him over a period of months, provokes him to jealousy by his heart, by his life. And then, as Yaakov begins to read the New Covenant scriptures in Hebrew for himself, he's shocked to see how Jewish this is. He doesn't see Christmas trees. He doesn't see Easter eggs. Excuse me. He doesn't see Inquisitions. He doesn't see Crusades. He sees Yeshua, the Jewish Messiah. So I think a bunch of people, Yaakov, are on the edge of their seats. What happens now when you come to realize the difference between religion and the truth of God and come face to face with the fact that Yeshua is our Messiah and he had to die first before he will come again to establish peace on the earth? What happened in your life?
As I read the New Covenant, I have come to realize that that can actually truly be, that this is the continuation of the Old Covenant, not the Halacha, not what the rabbis tells us. But Yeshua is the one who God promised to be a light to the nations, who God promised blessing to all the families of the earth. He is the one who is going to make sure that the house of God will be a house of prayer to all nations. Thought begin to just run into my mind. Could it be? And when I just it begin to make sense to me that this could be the natural continuation of the Old Covenant and not what the rabbi is telling us, because what the rabbi is telling us, I experienced. It didn't really sit well with me. And so now I see this, and it really sits well, but I have all this opposition from within me because of my childhood, because of my background, my upbringing, and it was very hard. But it began to just make sense. But to come to faith, it was pretty far for me. So what I did is what Jeff told me. This guy was very wise, I'm telling you. He told me, Yaakov, God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And the same God who revealed himself to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the prophets of Israel has not changed. If you come to him in spirit and truth, if you come to him with all your heart, and you ask him, he will be faithful to reveal to you. And after I was just halfway through the New Covenant, I thought to myself, what have I got to lose? This is the best business deal I can make with God. I mean, if he shows me, I know better. If he doesn't show me, I remain the same Yaakov. I've got nothing to lose. I take Jeff at his word, and I'll give it a chance. I'll give it a try. I'll give my best. And I'll never forget those days. Never, ever in my whole life. And no one will be able to take this away from me. For 2 weeks, I remember that while I was reading the New Covenant on my knees, every night, on my knees. God, if this is your promised Passover lamb, if this is the one you promised through the prophets of Israel that will come to die in my place, to redeem me, to save me first and foremost from sin, in order that you might reconcile me to yourself in the spirit, because holy as you are, you will not come and dwell within a sinful person, because we all fall short. We all sin. There is none, not even one righteous before you. And if you have come to provide such forgiveness, you show me, and I will be your slave to my last breath.
All right. Will you pray that prayer? Will you pray that prayer? Why not?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. I don't plan on taking calls these next 20 minutes or so, but if you have a Jewish-related question for me, I will be taking calls in the next hour. Even if you're not able to listen on your own local radio station, you can still call that same number, 866-34-TRUTH, for Jewish-related questions. I want to give maximum time to my guest, Yaakov Damkani. We're talking about his testimony of salvation, his website, trumpetofsalvation.org, his testimony book, Why Me? So, Yaakov, you pray to the God of your fathers, the God of Israel. You pledge that you'll give your life to him and be his lifelong slave, his Eved for life, if Yeshua really did die for your sins. Now what happens?
Well, one night, I can't really express this in words, 4 o'clock in the morning, spirit comes upon me, and I couldn't really say spirit. I knew nothing about spirit of God, things like this, but all of a sudden, this power beginning to come in me, and like waves and waves and waves, and my whole body is in goosebumps, and you really sense the presence of a power in the room, and the cleansing power cleansing me. I really feel some powerful washing that going in and out of me, in and out of me, in and out of me, and cleansing me. And I feel like as if someone just pulling my heart out and putting a heart in me. I can't really express this in word, but this was like for quite few minutes, four minutes long, and I'm sitting on the bed, and I'm realizing there is something going on here. Speak to me. Hineni avdecha, here I am, your servant, speak up. I didn't hear any voice, I didn't see nothing, but I could not really ignore this mighty power, the cleansing power that really began to wash me. Now, what happened in the morning when I woke up, I have my Bible, and I had my Bible, my new covenant, on my window, upside down. And I was just at the beginning of the book, and I naturally get my hands into the book to read, because I was reading in the evening and the morning. I was so excited reading this new covenant. And all of a sudden, I found this in the first letter of John, chapter 4 and 5. And I know I was just in the gospel. And I read this two chapter, and as if God knew exactly what I need. And it took a hold of me, and my weeping have... I cried, and I cried. And I tell you, that morning I knew that what happened to me in the night was just a visitation. And probably if I saw the angel, the Lord himself, I probably would drop dead. And in the morning, I realized, wow. And the feeling of a burden of sin, I mean, I thought I'm a free man. I thought I'm really free because I left home 16 years of age and nobody tell me what to do. I do what I want, when I want, and I thought I'm really free. That morning, I knew, wow, I was nothing but a slave to the lust of my mind, to the lust of my flesh, and I experienced such freedom. I have nowhere to really explain. And I like to shout, freedom! Freedom! And when I say freedom, Michael, I don't mean to take that freedom of taking the grace of God for granted. I'm talking about freedom now. Now that I know this cleansing power of the gospel of truth, now that I know the heart-changing truth, the life-changing truth, the salvation-giving truth, the heaven-opening truth, when that truth took a hold of me and set me free, it was simply now be free to serve the Almighty God. Not freedom to take the grace for granted. Not freedom to take this gospel and make use of it to meet my end met. But really a freedom just to serve God. And there was a determination within me. Now, that's it. Life belongs to God. I belong to Him. It took me about 3 months' time. Closed the shop down, left New Jersey, and start my whole life with God, with the thinking, I'm the only Jew now. This was 1977. I'm the only Jew who knows Yeshua, who knows God, who knows God in the Spirit. And I felt like a little tiny bitty Moses.
It's funny. I've heard this from so many of my Jewish friends that have come to faith, that when they came to faith, they thought that somehow they had been chosen by God. They were the first ones to bring this message, like Moses to Israel and the Torah, the law of God, that somehow that they were the first ones, and that they were now going to share this message. So you have a similar experience. It's amazing how isolated some of us could have been through this. And by the way, your freedom shout, I think, woke up about half the world. It's the loudest proclamation of freedom I think we've ever had on the radio here. But now you're now going to go, kind of like a little Moses. You've got this revelation. You're the first Jew who knows this. You're now going to tell your people. What were you expecting to happen?
Well, I thought I'm going to go back to Israel, and I'm just going to tell them what Jeff told me, and they'll all come to believe. I thought I'm just going to go there and proclaim it and just do whatever it takes to for the whole nation to hear it. And I imagined that right away, how can they not see it? I mean, it's just there. Isaiah speaks of it. Daniel speaks of it. Jeremiah speaks of it. Ezekiel speaks of it. Micah speaks of it. David speaks of it. How can they not see it? I was sure I'm going to go back, and I just going to tell them what Jeff told me. I really spell it out before them, and they will just come to realize what true Judaism is all about, what biblical Judaism is all about, and they will give up on all these gimmicks and all these religious activities and be, okay, definitely, let's hold the traditions. We have beautiful traditions. They are all nice and great, and I still uphold them and cherish them and make use of them in my life, absolutely. But to think that this is going to justify us before God, that to think because all these religious activities, I will be reconciled to God, what a deception. I'm going to go and tell them. Well, I went. It took me some time to go because, hey, I left New Jersey now, took my car. When I came to America, I was hitchhiking. Now I'm picking up hitchhikers. Uh-huh. And everybody I'm picking up, of course, I'm just letting him have it. Let him have the gospel, and I make my way. It took me about almost a year to get to California. Everywhere I go, I'm beginning to visit, to meet believers. It was awesome. And so I get to Los Angeles, and there I meet Kid Green. I'm sure you know Kid Green.
Of course.
Last Days Ministry in Woodland Hill. At the time, we were about maybe 40 people. We had about seven homes in Woodland Hill in one neighborhood. And what can I say? It was a glorious community living, and it was a powerful foundation for me. And the Lord kept me there for some time. And then it took me 3 years when God really finally took me back to Israel. I mean, it was very hard for me. I knew what I'm going to face in Israel. I knew the stubbornness of my people. And I had to go through a few things in the land here in America before I went back. It was 1981 that I went back.
So you go back to Israel, your homeland. Are you going to be bold in Israel? Are you going to risk your life or your reputation or your livelihood by sharing the good news freely? Or are you just going to keep it to yourself? What was your posture? What was your approach?
How can I keep, how can I keep such treasure, such truth to myself? It's just like, you know, someone having the medicine for cancer, and here is people dying around him, and he will not give it to them, okay? No, I just started, I mean, back then, 1981, I think we're really no more than 14 congregations, no more than a few hundred believers, perhaps 300 believers at the most. And everybody had all the reasons of why you cannot do it, why you should not do it, why it's impossible, why it's against the law. And it was the 10 and not even 2. Well, there were 2. I mean, you remember the 12 went, the 12 going to to spy the land?
Yeah.
And I couldn't hear why you can't and why you can't. I just want to really see how we can and we can, because in him we can do all things. and I boast in my Lord, and my pride is in God, but really the Lord really used me to break the ice in Israel and to really start the street evangelism and begin to print tracts and literatures, and finally my book came, and I don't know if you know, but I produced a film. Can you believe that? That this boy from Galilee now didn't even finish his high school, yeah? I became a producer. I have produced a film, first time in history, a documentary about Yeshua in Hebrew, of course, with subtitle in English, called Ovi HaKorah in Hebrew. I couldn't really find the word for that in English, so we call it in English, The Other Side of the Cross. Mm-hmm. And anybody who will go to YouTube can really see this film, The Other Side of the Cross. And now I'm in the process of producing a film, Michael, that I believe will change the face of Israel. I'm holding in my hand a powerful script.
All right, tell you what, you heard the music there. We'll find out about this when we come back. The website, Trumpet of Salvation to Israel, the book, Why Me?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with my guest, Israeli evangelist Yaakov Dankani. Yaakov, we've got about five more minutes. You were telling us about a script that you're working on that you think could have an enormous impact on reaching Jewish people with the gospel. Tell us more.
Well, this is like a fiction film. Briefly, because it's a real, it will take us 5 minutes, we won't really do it. But the film takes place in a high school next to our mission base, Trumpet of Salvation in Yafo. This is a real school, high school. In the school, you have Jewish and Arabs. And you don't hear such things like that in the news. But 70% in that school are Jews, 30% are Arab. We take a class, 18 years of age, the 12th grade. We put there five actors. One of them is playing a radical Muslim from the Muslim Brothers. The other one is a Muslim girl, very much in favor of Israel. She wanted to take an athletic Olympic for Israel. And one of them is a Christian Arab, Christian by name, knows nothing about Yeshua, knows nothing about the Bible, but he's Christian. Then you have a Druze. And then someone plays me, although I came to faith when I was 25 years of age, and this film, I'll be 18 years of age. And then you have the janitor playing Jeff. The janitor is Jeff, and he begins to drip truth into the heart and the mind of Jacob, Yaakov. This whole thing begins to explode in the classroom. The class also go to travel. Through the film, you're going to see the family of the Muslim. You're going to see the family of the Christian. You're going to see the family of Jacob, the Jew. And they are like a volleyball team in the school. They have a very strong friendship. Slowly but surely, Yaakov begins to understand Yeshua. He comes to faith. He begins to preach the gospel, share the gospel. I mean, there is a lot to say about the film. He's in love with a Muslim girl. The Muslim girl is end up being really raped by the radical Muslim who just really keep talking to her family about the way she dresses and the way she does, but he end up raping her. We're going to bring what happened in Tahrir in Cairo with all the raping of the woman there in this revolution in Egypt right through this movie and from another angle altogether. Anyway, Yaakov coming to faith, he begin to preach the gospel, and the film end up with him being killed by the anti-mission organization, and it's a dramatic story. The beautiful thing about it, you bring forth a lot of truth about free religion, and it's not like you're shoving it down the throat of people. It comes through a very dramatic story of teenagers with love story and so on.
So folks can find out about this at trumpetofsalvation.org. And Yaakov, have you ever run into opposition? Does everybody in Israel love you for preaching the good news of Yeshua on the streets?
Well, I want to make sure that we all understand this, that for everyone who wish to kill me, there are a few of those, everyone who wish to kill me in Israel, there are tens of thousands who want to hear the gospel. And that's where we have to really overcome our selfishness, our fear, Fear is a natural thing, but there the Holy Spirit really gives us all that we need to overcome fear. But yes, there is no small opposition. I don't want to talk about it. I've been beaten up many times over, bloodshed, all the rest. You know, you love the Lord and you count all this joy and you train yourself to fellowship in the suffering of the Lord.
Yeah, and we are to rejoice when opposition comes. In fact, lack of opposition means we're doing something wrong. Yaakov, in your book, Why Me, who should read this?
Anybody and everybody. I think, first of all, the Jewish people, the Jewish community should read that and come in touch with the difference between biblical truth and rabbinical Judaism, because rabbinical will not really reconcile us to God. Rabbinical will never give us assurance.
I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah. So first of all, the Jews should really read that. And anybody, Gentiles should read that. Christians should read that. Christians will really learn a lot, because there is, as much as we Jews are ignorant of Yeshua, Jesus, the church is very much ignorant of the plan of God for world salvation and redemption that is Israel-focused. They really don't know that. Many of the churches are really getting into this replacement theology, and even those who really are for Israel having all kind of romantic ideas about Israel, which they need to really wake up from the romantic idea and move into the real intention of God, who really cry out to make use of the Christians to bring the gospel back to the Jews, but they will do everything humanitarianly, humanitarian aids.
Right, and leave out the gospel.
Yeah,
and leave that out.
Hey,
yeah, absolutely. And of course, we 100% stand together to fix that. Thank you for sharing your story with us, brother. I'll try to be in contact with you just privately in the days to come. The website, trumpetofsalvation.org, the book, Why Me, by Yaakov Dankani. Thank you so much for joining us today on the air, brother.
Thank you, and shalom, shalom. Mike, it was really great, and all of you Americans, keep strong and very courageous in the love and the grace and the might of the Lord.
Amen. All right, friends, join me in Israel. Go to AskDrBrown.org. And by the way, there was a clip that started to play from Reverend Stephen Sizer for the next hour. Our bad on this end. My apologies if you're wondering where in the world did that come from. Join me in Israel. Our tour, be a tour of a lifetime. AskDrBrown.org. Just click on the Israel tour banner. I want you to hear a clip from my presentation. Is Israel an evil occupier? And then I'll explain what this is about in a moment.
Let's also remember that the yellow star that Jews wore in the Holocaust was first something that they wore in Muslim countries, that they had the status of dhimmis, which is a second-class citizen status. Now here they are in the land of Israel, and Haj Amin al-Husseini, who became a colleague and comrade of Hitler, famous pictures of him together with Hitler, working together for the extermination of the Jews.
This presentation is Israel and Even Occupier, DVD talk that I gave with PowerPoints at the University of South Florida. We could not find anyone to debate me, so we did this presentation. It's an eye-opening lecture, and then I answered questions that were submitted by the audience, some Palestinians and Muslims that submitted these. It's so important that we understand this, friends. It is so important that the church has the right information about Israel, because there is going to be increasing hostility towards Israel and towards standing with the Jewish people. That being said, your gift of any size, I leave for China on Saturday, and we've got some very special programming coming your way. And then after that, India. We could really use your help. Your gift of any size, I'll send you, is Israel an Evil Occupier? Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, the lost sheep of the house of Israel all around the world, not only in the land of Israel, perhaps the Lord will use you to win a precious Jewish soul to the Lord. Well, we hear about Christian Zionism, but how Christian is Christian Zionism?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, yeah, it is thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. And if you have any Jewish-related question for me at all, anything about modern Israel, anything about Jewish tradition, anything about the Hebrew language, anything about a verse in the Old Testament, anything about Jewish background to the New Testament, Messianic prophecy, Jewish objections to Jesus, and anything like that, I will gladly take your calls today, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. Now, hopefully I can answer any question you ask me right on the air, but you might ask me something where I've got to look into it. So go. This is not stump the doctor. I don't mean that, but I'm saying I'm going to do your best. I'm going to do my best to answer your questions, 866-348-7884. This past Saturday, I had the opportunity to have a short radio debate. It was over the course of an hour on Moody Bible Radio, a short radio debate with Dr. Stephen Sizer. He is an Anglican vicar and a very, very strong opponent, a very, very strong opponent to Christian Zionism, to the modern state of Israel in terms of that God has promised this land to the Jewish people and brought them back, and they have the right to be there. And obviously, we would both agree that there is a superficial, sentimental Christian support of Israel. We would both agree that Israel's actions towards its Palestinian neighbors are far from perfect. We would both agree that there's plenty of sin within the land of Israel itself, that you're not talking about a redeemed people, and the religious Jews who are very devoted are extremely hostile to Yeshua. At the same time, I absolutely recognize it is God who has regathered my people back to the land, not because of our goodness, not because of our repentance, but because of his mercy and his plan. And I fully recognize that it is a good and right thing to stand with the Jewish people. Why? Because of the promises of God, because of the church having a spiritual indebtedness to Israel in its history, which Paul speaks of in Romans 11, because of the history of anti-Semitism in so much of the church that this is a perfect way to undo that and to draw people back to the real Jesus. And ultimately, the one group of people that is truly desiring peace on a national level, I don't mean every Israeli, the one group of people is the Jewish people. And that ultimately, because the vast majority of Palestinians are Muslims, they do not want the Jewish people to have a lasting homeland there in the Middle East, especially the leadership, the religious leadership of these peoples. So for many reasons, we should be standing with Israel. We finally got to have the debate. I was pleased with how it went. I actually set my alarm for the wrong time and had very little sleep, but my head was very, very clear, and I was very, very focused for this. And I want to play a couple of the clips from that debate for you. This is not as a follow-up to it. In other words, I feel perfectly fine about what happened and how it happened, and I can just refer you to the debate. I'll tell you how you can listen to it in a moment. But I want to comment in a little further depth on some of the issues and unpack some of these things. And if you differ with me, if you have an issue, by all means, give me a call. We'll be right back.
name, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let me try to paint a picture for you that will be helpful. Michael Brown, welcome to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. If you have a Jewish-related question for me, if you do not agree with Zionism, if you don't believe that Christians should be standing with Israel, if you think the only proper Christian position is to stand with the Palestinians, if you don't believe that modern Israel is fulfillment of prophecy, let's have a dialogue about it. 866-34-TRUTH. I want to paint a picture for you in a moment, but let me say this first. If I had the opportunity to be in a hostile setting, in other words, I'm going to be on someone else's TV show or radio broadcast or a debate setting where I'm outnumbered and someone else controls the mic, as long as I believe I will have an opportunity to get some part of my message out, I will take that opportunity, unless the Lord checks my heart not to. And I have done that many times over the years. Why do I say that? Because I'll constantly hear from people. They'll write to our ministry, "Well, I'm not calling in because you control the mic." Well, I also provide you with a platform to talk to a whole lot of people on the radio that you wouldn't get to talk to and to present your point of view. Trust me, I've been on enough hostile shows over the years, and I think, well, when else are they going to get to hear the other side of this? So, you know, one of the funniest things is that I'll be doing radio, and, you know, during a 2-minute break or 1-minute break we have, I'll check something online, and I'll look for, social media update or Twitter or something like that, and I can't reply to the vast bulk of it. And people will be calling me out on Twitter or on Facebook. "How come you're not answering me?" Well, first, I can't answer the vast majority of posts and comments. There's simply not time to do that. And secondly, I'm doing a radio broadcast. And even though I can do a few things well at once, I can't do a quality broadcast and tweet and do Facebook updates at the same time, especially while I'm talking. No, I'm going to demonstrate what it would sound like, but suddenly my speech would be a little bit confused. And I'll post a note, "Call my show." You think I can that? Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe if somebody else is talking, I could, but let's not try that. But here's the point. Here's the point. I'll tell people, I don't have time to interact with radio, but call. I'm not going to call in your show. Oh, well, so I just want to tell you, if you really object to something, now maybe you're listening on podcast later and all you can do is, you know, scream and yell at the radio or your computer screen or, you know, hold your cell phone and start to shake it because you're mad at me. Don't be mad. Don't be mad. Isaiah 1:18, a famous verse, "L'chu na v'nivach echayach dav." Come and let's reason together. Let's discuss the matter. Let's have a spirited, honest debate about it. Let's look at the facts. That's all we're trying to do. 866-348-7884. Now, you don't have to call and be hostile. I'm just saying you feel free if you differ with me. I'm not threatened by it. And the more articulate you are, the better dialogue we can have. And the more you can back up your position, the better dialogue we can have. And if there's nothing behind it, we'll find that out pretty quickly, won't we? 866-34-TRUTH. To listen to my radio debate with Dr. Sizer, I hope we can have a much more substantial one face-to-face somewhere in America or in Israel or somewhere else or in England and really get to go back and forth over an extended period of time. I think it would be very, very fruitful because the issues are so, so crucial. If you want to listen to it, go to AskDrBrown.org and click on Latest Video, not Latest Audio, Latest Video, because it's up as a YouTube file. So you just click on that and you can listen to the whole debate. And the moderator, Julie Royce, did a great job. At the end, shared that her sympathies were the same as mine. But that was at the end of the show. Otherwise, it was an impartial, fair show the whole way through. So here's the picture I want to present to you. The younger generation does very well in terms of having a heart for justice, siding with the underdog. The younger generation doesn't see color distinctions the way the older generation did, ethnic distinctions. I don't mean they're perfect, far from it. Each generation has its own issues. But they tend to be, in that sense, more accepting of people who are from different backgrounds or you know, and even in wrong ways. Why? Because they don't combine the heart for justice with the heart for truth adequately. Again, I'm speaking in broad generalizations. So take the issue of same-sex so-called marriage. Perfect example. What happens? Well, young people say it's not fair. I mean, he's a really nice kid. Why shouldn't he be able to marry his boyfriend when he gets older? She's really sweet. What's wrong with her and her partner raising kids? They have a heart of love and tolerance on a certain level. At the same time, it's not mixed with truth. There's not an adequate understanding of the purpose of marriage. There's not an adequate understanding of gender distinction as God intended it. There's not an adequate understanding of the destructive nature of homosexual practice. But their heart for justice gets them passionate because it's not mixed for truth. Rather than helping in a constructive way, they advocate what's ultimately a destructive position. The same thing with the Israeli-Palestinian picture, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Here's my analogy. You come in a room and you see me, you hear screaming, yelling in the house, you see blood spattered, you come in the house and I'm on top of somebody, I'm holding them down and I'm punching them in the face and you grab me, Mike, stop, what are you doing? Stop, you're hurting a guy, you're going to kill the guy, what are you doing? Well, they don't understand that guy broke into the house and had gone through the house and had stabbed my family members who were now dead. And there was one more he was going after, and I tackled him before he could do it. And I was just trying to subdue him however I could before the police arrived. Well, you come in the picture and you don't see the larger narrative. It's easy to come to wrong conclusions. You follow me? Is that making sense? You don't look at the larger picture. You look at the smaller picture. Because of that, it looks like I'm doing violence to someone. No, actually, I'm trying to stop someone from killing another person. So, larger context. You go to Israel, and you see here is a fence, and then in certain parts, a wall. And then you go to talk to people on the other side of that wall. When they're Palestinians, and they're nice people, they're not terrorists. They tell you how this has hurt their business. They tell you how this has hurt their family. They tell you of discrimination they've experienced from the Israeli army. They share their horror stories, and some of the horror stories are horrible, and we should care. What you don't understand is that the fence, it's a fence, what, 97-98%? The massive majority is a fence, and then a wall in certain places. That was put up to keep murderers out. It's a terrible shame that others have suffered because of it. But it was put up to keep the murderers out. It was put up to stop the terrorists from coming in. And since it's been done, there's been a massive reduction in terror campaigns, massive reduction in terrorism in Israel. Yeah, there are hardships and difficulties because of it. Look, I was coming in from Canada a few months ago over the summer, and we almost didn't make it through the border crossing. I had forgotten my passport, and somehow I was flying into Buffalo. I wasn't thinking then crossing over into Canada, and somehow I missed it. My travel coordinator, we just missed it. So I just had my driver's license, and there's no way I should have gotten in with just my driver's license. But we prayed, the pastor I was with, we prayed, and everything worked fine. Almost no problem at all. Zoom, right through. Everybody was stunned. They were completely amazed. And they said, well, at least getting out is no problem. You're going back to the States. Well, that's when we almost didn't make it. I almost missed my flight. We got interrogated for some time, and I thought I was going to be sent over to another place. I have to wait online for hours, miss my flight. Thankfully, after a lot of questions, we went through. Well, a lot of Palestinians deal with that, and much worse, every single day of their lives. And not all the Israeli soldiers are sweet and nice and kind, even though they learn ethics, even though the first thing they learn when they're in the Israeli army is ethical treatment of others, even though oftentimes they endanger their own lives to protect Palestinian citizens in the midst of war. The fact is there are injustices, no question. But why do they exist? Because radical Islam, Palestinian terrorists, want to murder Israelis. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Is Israel really an apartheid state? Is Israel guilty of ethnic cleansing? Should Christians be standing with Israel? Michael Brown, welcome back to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to play a clip for you from my lecture, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? You can get the DVD. It's over 2 hours, my lecture, plus answers to questions from the audience at University of South Florida. And because they got this giant lecture hall sitting like 700 people think we were going to have a debate, and then no one would debate me. So instead, we had a turnout of maybe 70. I thought they just getting a small room, you know, seat 50, 70 people or 100 people. But because they were expecting a debate, which would draw a lot of people, we get this giant room. The nice thing is, there's this massive PowerPoint behind me as I speak. And even at this moment, I'm looking on my screen at this amazing map where you've got this tiny, tiny little red sliver surrounded by all of this green. I mean, it's massive. And what it is Israel surrounded by Muslim nations. Oh, it's an eye-opener. It's part of the lecture, which is yours for your gift of any size to help us as I prepare to leave for China and India to hold my hands up as we go in to help with our expenses. But let me just play this clip, and then I want to go to the phones. Let's see. Here we go.
Haganah, this is Israeli Defense Force. On April 22nd, at the height of the fighting in Haifa, it distributed an Arabic language circular noting its ongoing campaign to clear the city of all criminal foreign bands so as to allow the restoration of peace and security and good neighborly relations among all of the town's inhabitants. We implore you again to keep your women, children, and the elderly from the dangerous places, read the circular. This is to the Arab population of Haifa. And to keep yourselves away from gang bases that are still subjected to our retaliatory action. We do not wish to shed the innocent blood of the city's peace-loving inhabitants.
This is part of the lecture that I gave, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? And I think you'll find it tremendously eye-opening. So for your gift of any size, I want to send this out. It's good to watch as a church group, good for individual Bible study, good to sit down with those who differ with and show, and then just good for your own study. Call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. A little while, I want to play probably the most astounding moment from my debate with Dr. Sizer on the air on Saturday. But first, to the phones. Seth in Uniondale on Long Island, nice to hear from you. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi. I was just calling to say with John 10:22, I believe, with the Messiah celebrating the Feast of Dedication and Hanukkah coming up in a couple weeks, I was just more of a comment just to encourage people, disciples of Yeshua, of Jesus, to bless, you know, unbelieving Jewish people this time of the year. You know, to try to engage with them, you know, just on a person-to-person level and to be a blessing to them just because of the promise God has made to Abraham of, you know, people that bless the Jewish people, God will bless himself. So
Seth, let me ask you a question. Of course, you're talking about John 10:22. At that time, the Feast of Dedication took place at Jerusalem. It was winter. So this is the backdrop for some of Yeshua's teaching there in John 10. But Feast of Dedication is Hanukkah. That's what Hanukkah means, dedication. You mentioned, without the reference to Scripture, you mentioned Genesis 12:3, where God tells Abram, I'll bless those who bless you, and those who disdain you, I will curse. Dr. Sizer, when I was on the air with him, said that was for Abraham alone. There is no hint that it was for his descendants. That was for Abraham alone. Of course, I had a response for him on the air. But what would your response be if someone says, well, Seth, the call to bless Abraham has nothing to do with the call to bless Israel, the Jewish people. That was just a promise for that man alone. How might you respond to that?
Well, God also brought the same promise to his descendant Isaac, too. So he definitely did bring the promise down to his descendants. And you know,
did you have a particular passage in mind when you mentioned Isaac?
I often don't know the verse. I just know that's in Genesis that God speaks about. You know, he brings the same promise to Abraham's son.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, though, Seth, of course, that you're aware of, but it's important that we remember, was especially in the Semitic world and in the ancient Hebrew mindset, you lived out your future through your children, through your descendants. And verse 2, which we all know comes before verse 3, God says there, I will make of you a great nation. The Hebrew is goy, which becomes in Jewish parlance the word for Gentile, but something means nation. I will make of you a great nation, and all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you, through your seed. So to separate verse 3 from verse 2 and think it just applies to the man Abraham, of course, it doesn't work at all. But thank you for the call, and let's especially pray for our Jewish friends and for the lost sheep of the house of Israel as we come close to Hanukkah season. And let's read the New Testament as much as possible through Jewish eyes, asking for insight as we do. And let's let the Jewish world know, if you consider yourself a Christian, a follower of Jesus, let's let the Jewish world know what a real Christian is like. Let me just see if we have a minute. This one little moment of interaction was kind of priceless on the broadcast as I was debating Reverend Sizer when I referenced I referenced something that he had previously said, and he denied saying it. We had the quote ready for him. Listen to what happened.
I work with many in the land, Jewish believers, and they're constantly working with Arab brothers and sisters and constantly working for reconciliation. Yet Dr. Sizer says that Christian Palestinians who stand with Israel are denying Jesus Christ and are an abomination. That's what's very troubling to me.
Okay, Dr. Sizer?
I didn't say that, but...
No, I have the actual quote. I've listened to it. I've played it on my radio show.
Right. Can you just repeat the quote then for me, please?
Sure, that there are Christian, I'll get it exactly here. There are certainly churches in Israel-Palestine that side with the occupation, that side with Zionism. They've repudiated Jesus, they've repudiated the Bible, and they are an abomination. Q&A at Rivercourt Methodist Church, King Street, Hammersmith, October 6, 2011.
Dr. Sizer?
Okay. I'm comfortable with that statement being true of some Christians and some churches.
Amazing, huh? I didn't say it. And then, well, I'm comfortable with that for some. Yep. All right, friends, get your copy of Is Israel an Evil Occupier? It really sets the record straight. Amazing quotes from the past and present throughout the presentation. Yours for your gift of any size to help as I prepare to go to China and India. 1-800-278-9978. Be as generous as you can. We want to send this right out. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I'm taking any Jewish-related questions you might have. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. And prepare for a fun week of broadcasting next week right here on the Line of Fire. You'll be hearing from me from China and hearing from some special guests. So I think it's going to be really a fabulous week of broadcasting. 866-34-TRUTH. This is an interesting report. There's been monitoring of Palestinian textbooks for some years, and often the case is that the textbooks that the kids get in school do not mention Israel. There's just Palestine, or Israel's not on the map, remarkably. Well, here's a report. Arab textbooks are not the only ones erasing Israel from their maps. Scholastic, the world's largest publisher of children's books, has also eliminated the Jewish state in a book. Friends, people are going to have a problem with Israel. It's supernatural. It's supernatural. Thea Stilton and the Blue Scarab Hunt, part of the popular Geronimo Stilton children's series, translated from Italian and published by Scholastic in 2012, tells the story of a group of investigative journalists involved in a treasure hunt in Egypt. The story commences with a map of modern Egypt and its neighboring countries. While Sudan, Libya, and Saudi Arabia appear clearly on the map, the territory of Israel is completely covered by Jordan, painted red. A line indicating the Israeli border with the Sinai Peninsula does appear in the book. Adina Golombek, a Jerusalem resident who emigrated to Israel from Canada last year, said she was shocked to discover Israel's absence while reading the book with her 7-year-old son. She told the Times of Israel, "I wanted to show my son where we lived in the Middle East, but it didn't say Israel on the map. Instead, it said Jordan. I showed him the problem and drew in the border of where Israel is today." According to this report, founded in Pennsylvania in 1920, Scholastic has grown to become the world's largest publisher and distributor of children's books. Also has exclusive publishing rights for the Harry Potter series in the United States. Kyle Good, a senior vice president for corporate communications at Scholastic, told the Times of Israel in an email that her company would stop selling the book until the error was amended in the book's next edition. The president of Trade Publishing, he said, who was on a plane yesterday returning from Europe, has confirmed for me this morning that we are stopping shipments of this title, making the correction, and going to reprint. We regret the error. Well, bad for them that it happened, good for them that they fixed it. The Times of Israel reports a recent study carried out by Israeli and Palestinian researchers found that 96% of Palestinian school textbooks did not mention Israel by name in their maps. Similarly, 87% of Israeli school textbooks did not designate the Palestinian territories by name. Oh, so it goes two ways, huh? Interesting. Friends, we need to be aware of all of the dynamics, and that's why I say that Christians standing with Israel, recognizing that God restored the Jewish people back to the land in his mercy and grace for his purposes, recognizing that the church has a debt of love to demonstrate to Israel and the Jewish people, especially in light of church history, as well as in light of salvation coming through Israel and the Jewish people. The Christians standing with Israel do not do so blindly. And if there is injustice in Israel, it is Christians standing with Israel and Messianic Jews standing with Israel that can say, this is wrong. This is a double standard. When you, however, condemn Israel, when you blast it as an apartheid state guilty of ethnic cleansing, when you bring ridiculous charges against Israel, as some of our callers and others have done in the past, it's impossible to really help the situation. Recognize God's restoration of the Jewish people back to the land, and then standing with God and his ancient chosen people, although now estranged, you can help call Israel to do what is right.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, come on. A caller calling me out, challenging me on my views on Israel, wants a debate, and he's gone. He was going to be the second caller I was going to get to, and he's gone. Robert, what happened to you, buddy? Nothing more, well, very few things do I like more than being challenged in a position that I hold to. Someone wanted to debate the issues. Ah, what a disappointment. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones with Orlando in High Point, North Carolina. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Very well, thanks.
Reason I'm calling is regarding the comet Eisen.
All right. I know just a drop about it. Obviously, folks are following this with interest, but I'm no expert on it. Go ahead.
The reason why NASA reports that it's going to be right on top of the sun on the first day of Hanukkah.
And what are they expecting to happen with it?
Well, if it goes around the sun, it'll look like a big candle on the first day of Hanukkah, and it'll keep on burning.
Well, that's, hey, interesting. Let's see what happens. So Hanukkah is what? A little under 2 weeks from now. Wednesday, November 27th, looks like Hanukkah begins, ends Thursday, December 5th.
It'll be done 5th. After sundown, though, because it's a Jewish.
Yeah, of course. It begins, the holiday begins in the evening. All right, so tell you what, Orlando, let's see. I'll be back from China here at home before my trip to India, but what does it matter if it's worldwide? So tell you what we'll do. Let's see if anything happens. If something happens, which is some kind of interesting coincidence, then we'll discuss, could it be God sending a message? Fair enough. We won't speculate before, but if something actually...
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. So in other words, you're drawing our attention to this, and if it actually looks like a candle burning or something like that, or there's a light, or there's some kind of sign, or let's say it, or something unusual happens and it ties in with a very specific time of the year, Hanukkah. I mean, it'd be best if it starts when the sun is setting in Israel, when the holiday begins there. But let's see, all right? And if something unusual happens, you give me a call. Dwight, just remember Orlando from High Point, North Carolina. You give me a call, and we'll think about it together. Fair enough?
Fair enough. How about the Ford Tetra that is coming next year and in the next 2 years also?
Okay, what's this that's coming?
That's the Ford Tetra. It's the four bloody moons right on Leviticus 23.
Yeah, I know that John Hagee and some others have been talking about that.
John Hagee doesn't have it.
Okay. No, listen, I'm just saying a friend of mine asked me because John Hagee's been talking about it. That's how I heard about it. I want to be totally honest with you, Orlando, all right? I'm a believer, not a skeptic. In other words, right, I don't have to be convinced that God works and acts and unusual things happen. At the same time, I've been around long enough to see a whole lot of flaky things and people looking for this sign, that sign, and nothing changes and nothing really happens and everything comes and goes. So ultimately,
and 9 out of 10 people, yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Right.
9 out of 10 people trying to make money. I agree
with that. And then a lot of just, you know, armchair observers are fascinated with this kind of stuff. And the vast majority of time, just in my lifetime and what I've seen studying the history of it, this stuff comes and goes, and there's nothing to show for it. The proof of the pudding's in the eating. So let us see what unfolds. But thanks for alerting us. All right, Orlando? I appreciate that. Let me tell you a quick little cute story, all right? It's not a story. It was a cartoon in Mad Magazine. I grew up as a boy reading Mad Magazine. I understand it's gotten much more vulgar and worldly over the years. I'm sure it's still sarcastic. I haven't seen it for ages and ages. But Mad Magazine, I grew up with, you know, Jewish editors and stuff. You could tell that Alfred E. Newman was the face, the cartoon face of Mad. a lot of Jewish humor, a lot of sarcasm. So the fact of the matter is that I grew up New York Jew, so sarcasm kind of runs in my blood. Then you add in Mad Magazine. There was a special feature. They'd have it every few months, but my dad got me a subscription to it, so it'd come once a month. And every few months, they'd have mad, snappy answers to stupid questions. And I loved that. That was one of my favorites, you know, the dripping sarcasm. Now, of course, a lot of it's cruel. A lot of it's anything but appropriate for believers. But then there's the funny sarcasm and some of the humor that comes out of it. Well, I got a Mad Magazine book, and there was a cartoon in the book, all right? There was a cartoon in the book. And in the cartoon, there was a picture of three pizzerias side by side on the same block. One pizzeria said, "Mario's Pizzeria, greatest pizza in the universe." And there were like two people walking in there. Next to that, "Gino's Pizzeria, greatest pizza in the world." And like four people walking in that. And then next to that, "Irving's Pizzeria, greatest pizza on the block." And people are streaming in there. So you say, what in the world does that have to do with signs and eclipses and all this stuff? Simply to say, there's a lot of stuff that sounds very interesting and sounds very exotic and sounds very astonishing. But the proof of the pudding is, let's see what actually happens. How's the world the next day? What's going on? Is God speaking through this? Is there a lesson for us to learn? Now, sometimes he speaks and we don't listen. And sometimes there's upheaval and it comes in such a way as to get our attention because it is so dramatic. There have been massive earthquakes and natural disasters that happened on the exact same date on consecutive years. And you think, is it just another sign of the shaking of the world and the instability of the world? The first one didn't get our attention. The second one on the exact same date, 1 year later, December this, January this. We look at that and we say, okay, is there a message here for us? So if there's something conspicuous and clear and the timing is such, I believe there can be these messages, but so much of the times, here's what I'm thinking about. What does the Bible say? Tell you what. What does the Bible, you know what it says? It says, love God and love your neighbor. Yeah, but man, and by the way, I'm not mocking Orlando's call. I'm talking about the larger mentality that can be out there. Oh, you heard about that? You hear about, I saw that latest headline. Oh, and I, you know, that's very interesting, but, you know, it says you should be nice to your wife and love your kids. You know, it says you should live a holy life. You know, it says here that you should reach out to the lost. In other words, we get caught up in all this esoteric stuff. And the question is, what does the word say about how I'm supposed to live? Isn't that the real issue? How are we supposed to live today? Just want to play another clip from my DVD, Is Israel an Evil Occupier?
800,000 Jewish refugees had to flee their homes and countries when Israel was reestablished in 1948. About 600,000 Arab refugees fled the newly formed state, waiting for their Arab brethren to drive the Jews into the sea. Well, what happened to these two refugee groups? The newly formed Jewish state successfully incorporated its refugees. They fled there, and the vast majority were resettled there. The surrounding Arab nations did not, quite intentionally, producing the crisis of the displaced Palestinian people, a crisis that remains to this day. Why weren't the refugees successfully absorbed in the surrounding Arab nations?
Do you know that the Arab League, less than 10 years after the establishment of the State of Israel, the Arab League made a resolution, Resolution 1457, look it up, I brought it up to a hostile caller last week. Look up Resolution 1457 of the Arab League. It was agreed on that they would make no effort to absorb the Palestinian refugees. And they weren't called Palestinian refugees at that time. they would not make any effort. No Arab nation, no surrounding Muslim nation, in particular, we're not talking about Iran, we're talking about the Arab League here. No Arab nation would lift a finger to resettle, absorb the exiled Arabs who had fled because of the war. You say, that's cruel. Yes, it's cruel, but it makes Israel look bad. So this DVD, friends, is Israel and Evil Occupier. It's the most comprehensive presentation I've ever done. Looking at why are people calling Israel an apartheid state? Why are they saying Israel's guilty of ethnic cleansing? What's the real truth here? Get hold of this through a gift of any size. 1-800-278-9978.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Here's a Rapture Watch website. With Israel's 60th anniversary now passed and the period of regeneration being 70 years, that was 40. I was originally told it was 40, and Jesus had to come back by 1988. That's 70. Maybe someone's going to find it's 100 based on Genesis 15, where period of generations there seems to be 100 years per generation. Maybe they're going to come up with that next, or who knows what, once you try to time set. Would you all just breathe deep and sigh with me for a moment? With Israel's 60th anniversary now passed and the period of regeneration being 70 years, there are only so many years left in the equation. The tetrad of 2014-2015 falls in the 67th and 68th years. Therefore, there must be some significance if the tribulation spans the last 7 years of the 70. We'll have to wait and see what now develops as the time of the rapture approaches. It should become increasingly clear to students of the Bible that the time has come. Though we know we're at the end, we are now left to fine-tuning to know the hour, Revelation 3:3. The clearer we can see Ezekiel 38:39 approaching, the clearer we should be able to see the coming rapture. If it is 2008, then things must develop quickly. If it's 2010, then there's still a little room left. Uh-oh, it's 2013 now, and it's still on the website. Uh-oh. In any regard, the time is shorter than most would have us believe. Those signs of the end look to 2010 to 2017 as being the time of the tribulation. There's no reason to not watch for the coming day. Until then, that makes three possible rapture days, which is the Feast of Trumpets, 2008, 2009, 2010. You know, I have a sneaking suspicion. Just something in my gut tells me that's wrong. I don't, Joey, Dwight, Randy, help me here. Someone's just telling me that that's wrong. I am being sarcastic. I think this is righteous sarcasm. Pull this stuff from the website or say, okay, we were totally wrong, and this discredits everything else we have to say with all of our date setting. Jesus never told us to look for specific dates, but to look for him. That's the issue, to be looking for his appearing, eagerly longing for his appearing. You say, aren't there signs he spoke of? When they truly unfold, they will be so clear that it will be undeniable that the shaking is here. And you want to know the real issues? You know, Christians are all caught up with all this peripheral stuff. And I haven't been able to look at all of them, but YouTube comments from some folks to the debate. Why should Christians side with, Israel? They're not saved. Why should Christians side with people who reject Jesus? You don't understand the larger pictures. You don't get that. I don't think God has any more promises to Israel. We're Israel now, really. All the more reason that this DVD is Israel and Evil Occupier is important. And again, everyone can get it, your gift of any size, to help me with my upcoming trips to China and in particular to India. 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. And thanks in advance for your generosity. Let's go to the phones. Albert in Greensboro, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Oh, hello, Dr. Brown. I just have a few comments. First of all, I like what you said in your response to the Strange Fire Conference and that the gifts are still going on today, and I appreciate that. And for the people who say that that it, you know, the Bible doesn't really say that, you know, if you bless Israel, that you would not be blessed. I would like to, you know, bring your attention to the book of Revelation when Jesus returns. And the Bible says that he brings together two groups, the sheep and the goat. And he puts forth this before them. He says that, you know, the sheep on the right and goat on the left. And he says that when I was hungry, when I was thirsty, when I was in jail, you ministered to me. And they said, well, Lord, when did we minister to you? And he said, when you've done it to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it to me. And then he says, because of this, you know, enter thou into the kingdom of heaven that was prepared before the foundation of the world. And so there is a definite, even though the nation of Israel right now is unregenerate because they have rejected the Messiah, and even though there's a part in the book of Revelation where even God refers to them as Sodom and Egypt, yet there is still a covenant with that nation. It will never be defeated. God is the owner of the earth and all things, and he gave that to them, to Abraham. Jerusalem will be the capital of the universe, you know, forever, because he's going to set up his kingdom in Israel.
Albert, just to jump in, I found it very surprising years back that there are a number of leading Bible commentaries and commentators that and study Bibles that read those verses in Matthew 25, 31 to 46 the same way. I'd always read them in terms of just generic poor and hurting or persecuted believers. I was surprised to find that many read the scripture just as you're saying. And here's a larger thing that I think people have to recognize. A test is always a test. When God tests us on something, it's never easy. You know, a test in school or in life, in order for it to be a test, it has to have some element that makes it a test. So if Israel was just the perfect place, everybody loves the Jews, the Jews are the most perfect people in the world, there are no issues, there's no opportunity to accuse, and they're just hated, persecuted by the whole world, the sweetest, nicest people in the whole world, and everybody hates them, and Christians are told to side with them, you know, that's kind of easy to get right. But when Jewish people are people like everybody else, Jews don't sin more or less than others, we're like everybody else, and when there are always two sides to a conflict, then you start to see, why all this hatred towards Israel? Why more hatred towards Israel than sometimes for terrorists who are out to take their lives? Why more sympathy for refugees that the Arab world has done nothing to help in terms of resettle and absorb, as opposed for all the refugees that made their way into Israel? Hey, Albert, I've got to run, but thank you for the call. Look, truth is important. Didn't Jesus say that the truth will set you free? So this DVD is Israel, an Evil Occupier. I put a lot of time into the presentation. The notes, the graphics are so valuable and helpful for you. So we'll go through systematic history. We'll go through past history. We'll find out how we got where we are today. And then that'll give you a spiritual understanding of what's going on and how God has supernaturally worked. This is a testimony of his faithfulness. You want God to be faithful to Israel even when it sins, because you want God to be faithful to the church even when we've sinned. This will help you see the supernatural forces involved in the conflict and God's purposes for Israel. So your gift, again, of any size to help as we prepare to go to China and India, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, do you really want to see evidence of a supernatural God, of his faithfulness, of his covenant promises? Look no further than Israel.